Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Universal Energy Radio here on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Mary Jo Bull, and I am the host of this weekly podcast, the subject of which is, to put it succinctly, self-mastery and self-actualization. And I have been speaking and teaching about this topic for the past 20 years or so. I've been a lifelong disciple, though, of learning and integrating this information. I have a deep drive to know myself and to understand the world better and to understand how things really work. And what I've come to recognize is that life does get better and better the more I work on my deeper connection to life, to my soul, to my creator. For those of you who are listening by phone, if you have a question, you can click the number 1 on your phone keypad, and I will get an indication that you would like to be connected directly to me in the studio. And I will just ask that you give me your first name, where you're calling from, and your question. For those who are listening via the web, if you have a question that comes up during tonight's podcast, please feel free to text me directly at 703-943-9705. And I'll do my best to get your question answered on the air. Again, include your first name, where you're from, and of course, along with your question. So let's get started. I don't know about you, but this has been one hell of a summer. How are you going? We started off this year in circumstances that none of us have ever experienced before. I certainly know I haven't. For me, June and July have been particularly intense energetically. Right before Memorial Day weekend, I woke up in the middle of the night. I'm not sure what woke me up, not that I'm the soundest sleeper out there, but something woke me up. But not all the way up, sort of just in that half awake state. And I was aware that there was a light, and it wasn't a bright light. It was dimmer. It was softer. And it was in a section of my bedroom, which is fairly large. I think this room is about 16 by 16. It was in a section of my room where I wouldn't expect to see any light. There is no other light source other than I have a floor lamp, and that certainly wasn't turned on. Again, it's the middle of the night. I just kind of noted it in my half sleep and went back to sleep. And in the morning, I woke up and recalled that I had seen this light. And of course, you know, logic kicks in. And I started to kind of try to find a logical, rational, reasonable explanation for this light. And over, 5 or 10 minutes of kind of looking around and piecing things together, I didn't come up with a logical or a rational explanation. And I was sort of faced with the concept, the idea of there was a being of light in my room. And how did I feel about that? What did I think about that? And I texted my mentor, my longtime teacher, David, and I said in the text, I think that I had a being of light in my room last night. And he texted me back and he said, "You think?" with a question mark. What does that mean, you think? And so we talked later on that day, and we didn't talk so much about the concept, the idea that there was a being of light, that I was aware of a being of light in my room, it was really more about why would I resist that? Why, what is it in my thinking that makes an event or experience like that, you know, weird or something to be explained away? That was really what more of it was about for me than anything else. And as the summer has unfolded, I am recognizing that I'm on this path of more deeply integrating the unknown, the spiritual, the etheric, the you know, metaphysical, that which is outside of the normal boundaries of what we would call the physical world. And that's how my summer kind of kicked off. Because the 1st of June, there was a development in my personal life. And the following week, there was a development in the personal life of someone close to me. And it sort of set off this chain of events for the next coming 8 or 9 weeks. And in the process of that, I became aware of a desire that I wasn't aware of before. And it motivated me to learn more about and understand better what is my soul. What exactly is that? I grew up in the Catholic tradition, and I formulated a belief that my soul is inside me, I guess. And it, you know, when I talk about my soul, my hands usually flutter around my heart area. So the idea that my heart houses my soul. So I started to do some more, you know, reading and asking for some more information. And what I came to recognize that we actually live inside our soul, this source, where I read that. And I was just talking with somebody about this today. I need to drill down on exactly where it was I saw that. But when I read that I'm having this experience inside my soul, somehow it freed me up from a burden of, I guess, responsibility, sort of. A burden of, how do I put this? Okay, so this desire that came to light for me in the beginning of June is a large one. And that's the way I would characterize it. In the world of a spirit, there is nothing large or small. It just is. One of my favorite teachers says, it is as easy to create a castle as a button. So our perception of, I guess, range of difficulty is how we would characterize something being big versus small. Something that we can control doesn't seem to be quite as difficult or important, you know, because we have control over it. So I guess when I think of something being big or challenging, it's because there's a lot of aspects of it that I don't have direct control over. So this desire that came forth for me, when I started looking at it through the lens of this is a soul urge, somehow I was able to sort of relax a little bit more, kind of sit back and say, okay, well, if this is what my soul wants, then I'll take the ride. And you know, asking for more information, asking for encouragement, asking for direction. And during that, especially in July, the time period of July, my attention was drawn to a volume that I relied on a great deal in an earlier portion of my life, probably back in the early 2000s into the 2010s, I guess, by a woman. Her name was Florence Scovel Shinn. She wrote a book called The Game of Life and How to Play It. And that book helped me grow spiritually, mentally, and conceptually, leaps and bounds. And I found my attention drawn to it again. And it's one of those volumes that I will have with me for the rest of my life. A couple of times in the last decade, I've had the opportunity to go through, I love books, and I've purchased books for many, many years. And my daughter gave me a Kindle for Christmas 3 or 4 years ago. And what a godsend that was and continues to be. But I've gone through and cleaned out volumes over the years. But that book is one that I will have with me for the rest of my life. Because what I really appreciate about this woman, she was a spiritual teacher back in the early part of the 20th century, and she understood scripture. She understood the meanings within the scripture. And if you're at all familiar with scripture, you probably understand that scripture is very layered. And depending on where you are in your life and in your understanding, what lens you're looking at the world through, there, the meanings of the words will be deeper and more heartfelt is there such a thing as being understood by the heart? But again, referring back to my longtime mentor and teacher and friend, David, it was through him that I found this book. Because when he and I first started working together back in 2006, I didn't have an appreciation of scripture at all. In fact, I don't think I owned a Bible at that point. I don't think I'd really read the Bible much. I was familiar with passages because, you know, attending Mass every Sunday with my family. But reading scripture isn't something that, at least when I was growing up, was encouraged within the Catholic Church. So we did have a family Bible, but we never, it was more for decoration. It was something, it held a place of reverence in our house. So one of the first questions that David had asked me when we first met was, you know, what do you think about the Bible? And at the time, I believed it was an excellent book, that it was filled with lots of really helpful stories. I didn't believe it was divinely inspired. I believed that it was written by, you know, good men who knew what they were talking about, and women. There's a couple of books in there by women. So as he and I worked together over those first 2 or 3 or 4 years, he helped me to see this through a different lens. And so I sort of developed this appreciation for scripture and kind of became a little bit enamored of my growing ability to interpret what it means, what certain passages mean. Now, I have not read the entire Bible from back to front. That might be something I accomplish before the end of this life. I'm not sure. But I always seem to get direction from Spirit when there's something that would benefit me. I'll get a reference, or I'll hear a phrase that is familiar, and I'll say to myself, where have I heard that? Is that scriptural? And I'll put it in Google and it will pop up. To kind of give you a flavor of that, I was on my Facebook feed yesterday, and I was just kind of scrolling through, And my attention was drawn to this post that had to do with Daniel in the lion's den and a prayer that Daniel evidently said when he was in the lion's den, a prayer of protection, a prayer of assistance from God. And it drew my attention, and I, you know, read the article, and I was pretty fascinated with what I read, but it occurred to me a couple hours later, this might have been direction for me to read the book of Daniel. There might be something in there that pertains to what's been happening for these last 3 months that I might benefit from. So I started reading the book of Daniel. And what I gleaned from it was that if we can recognize that everything comes from the realm of spirit, that the God source, the creator, life dwells in, is in the realm of spirit. If we can accept that and work with that and give it the proper homage, if you will, then we can see ourselves as co-creators with the creator. So we create our own reality. And if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably already aware of that. We create our own reality, and we can, and we have the right to, and I believe that we're here to be creators. I think that that's why we're here on this physical plane, in this material world. We're here to create. And we've forgotten that, and no one tells you that usually growing up. I don't really know anybody who grew up knowing this. But what I've experienced, from what I've experienced over the last 2.5 to 3 months, is that's exactly what we're here to do, is we're here to create our own heaven on earth. And we have the right to do that. That is our purpose in life, is to create heaven on earth and to clean up our own sort of cause and effect that we have experienced as we've gone through the world. In our ignorance, not knowing who we are, making choices that weren't in harmony with who we are, that's what we're here to do, is to get back to the sort of overarching or umbrella topic for this weekly podcast, to self-actualize and to master the self. And self-mastery is mastering our thoughts and our feelings, to create our emotions, to create a feeling which then reverberates sort of out into the field to co-create along with whatever term you're comfortable with, God, source, creation, Fred. Colette Baron-Reed refers to God as Fred because it feels comfortable to her. Many people are triggered by the word God. There's a charge on that word, and they're uncomfortable with it. And so I think there's a problem with finding another word that works for you that doesn't have a charge on it, that might be more neutral, like source. I kind of go back and forth. There are days when I love the idea of a personal God. I really appreciate the idea that there is this being whose attention is focused on me and who's adoring me and loving me and is just waiting for me to command ye my hands, kind of thing. There are other times when I'm more comfortable with the idea of a neutral source. It's a very personal and inner experience. So, again, this book, The Game of Life and How to Play It, has been really important to me over the last few months because it's reminded me of my place in the world. My place in the story of us. And so this morning when I was getting ready for this podcast, when I was thinking about what I was going to talk about, I was actually in line at Starbucks and listening to, I think I was actually listening to a recording. I think I have it on my Audible, and I was listening to the book on Audible. And as I was giving my order to the Starbucks person, my experience is something as mundane and, well, mundane is a good word. Something as mundane as putting in an order at Starbucks occupies my left brain, which frees up my right brain, which is where my creativity is located, where my connection to spirit is located. It's that part of the brain that allows for these broader conversations, these broader experiences. And as I was focused on putting in my order, and I sound like someone right off the movie When Harry Met Sally. And, you know, I won't get into that, but I'm very specific about what I like. So as that was happening, all of a sudden these thoughts were sort of flooding in about what, you know, for me personally, this experience these last 2.5-3 months, what has this really been about for me? One of my gifts, one of the skills that I innately possess, and I think it has a lot to do with being born under the sign of Virgo. Virgo is very, there's an order to things. We're very logical. And we like to distill things down to their essence. And so I think that's what was happening on some level. I was asking, what is this experience all about for me? What is this? How can I talk about this on this podcast tonight? And what it boiled down to was, we're all here wanting and working to experience me as the God within me. And what does that mean? I want to expand my awareness, my consciousness to include, to be consumed by me as God projected into this world as a creator. I want to experience myself as a creator like God is. So that kind of was like, whoa, that, okay, yeah, I can see that. I can see that. And again, as a Virgo, I really do appreciate that distillation down to that essence. So as I'm driving home, drinking my coffee and thinking about this, I'm like, okay, well, what does that mean? So how do we experience God? Because even though scripture says we are made in the image of God, because God is not a physical, God is not a material being, a material thing, and we know that because we know that God is omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent. God is infinite. God is eternal. And anything that is in the material world is not those things. We also know that God is truth. And there's only one truth. And when we're here in the material world, we have our own truths, right? We go through life and our truths can shift and change. We can choose to shift and change them. So anything that can be changed or harmed or destroyed isn't of the material world. So we know that God is not of the material world. Scripture says, though, that we are made in his image. So what does that mean? That means that we have been imbued with the powers of creation through the faculties of thought and emotion. So when I was driving home, drinking my coffee, what I was recognizing was, how do I actualize, I want to experience myself as God. How do I do that? I do it through not just thought, but the feeling faculty. God is an experience. God is a feeling. Creating is a feeling. And I was reminded that one of my favorite teachers says repeatedly, everything you think you want it because you believe you will feel better when you have it. It's the feeling that the circumstance, the condition, the relationship, what have you, represents to you. That's what you want, is the feeling. You want the feeling that this condition, person, circumstance elicits from within you. You want the feeling. That's what you want, because the feeling is the experience of God. And so I've had conversations with people over the years who say, I don't know what I want. What do I do if I don't know what I want? And my advice to them is, you know how you want to feel. We all know. We want to feel good. You know, people who we would accuse of being the worst of the worst on the planet, when you get right down to it, they want to feel good. They've done what they've done because they don't know who they are. They believe that they're separate from the Creator, and they haven't tapped into that pathway of connecting with this broader, wiser, more expansive, omnipotent energy, stream, source, well-being. This is the reason why people do make the choices that they make. This is the reason why people commit heinous crimes and do awful things to other human beings. Because they don't know who they are. And we make choices in a moment of emotional chaos and frustration, and because in that moment we've forgotten who we are, we've forgotten what we came here to be, who we came here to be. That's the whole purpose of this. That's the whole purpose of your life, is for you to remember who you are and where you came from. How do we do that? Well, it is a combination of thought and emotion. And I was having a conversation with someone today. We were talking about the faculty of feeling and why feeling is so important. Most of us live in the world of thought, and we're very comfortable in the world of thought. Not so comfortable in the world of feeling. Emotions are something that we typically avoid like the plague. And because we don't understand them, not that they necessarily can be understood. This is one of the mysteries of life. But they do have a purpose, and they do have a role. And there is benefit to understanding what that purpose and what that role is. They have a role in creation. They also have a purpose in helping us to become more self-aware. To be aware of yourself is to be able to change your world and to grow. If there are beliefs and ideas in your subconscious that you're not aware of, but you're experiencing difficulties in your life, those difficulties, the emotion that you feel in the difficulty, if you'll give yourself time to sit quietly with it and ask what the message is, and then have the courage to accept what you're hearing and make any changes that you feel motivated to make, that's how you grow. And the more you grow, the more you come into the truth of who you are, the more compassion you can experience, and the more you have to give to others. You know, those challenging moments have helped me to be aware of the ways that I continue to hold myself in bondage and how I can free myself. thoughts are valuable because that's how God created all of this. We are a thought in the mind of God. This earth plane was a thought in the mind of God. The universe, the galaxies, was all a thought in the mind of God. So thought is important. However, in any given day, at any given time, in any given day, we are under the influence of different factors. Okay? And because we're here to live life and to sort, you know, sift and sort and experience and discern preference, it really isn't practical to sit in a chair and wait for a thought to come in and process that thought and pick and choose. That, I mean, how do you hold a full-time job? How do you spend time with your family? You know, thoughts are something that come in, they come and they go, they come and they go. And they come from the world, from the realm of the unseen. So if you're not aware of what influence you're under in the moment, you could kind of go off down the rabbit hole. You can find yourself going down a path that's just going to cause you a lot of grief and a lot of trouble that you might probably learn from, but you don't necessarily have to go that way. I'm not talking about spiritual bypassing here. There's been a lot of conversation, especially since the beginning of this year, about spiritual bypassing. And when you feel a negative emotion, doing all you can to pivot from that emotion, to, you know, reach for a thought that feels better. There's definitely a place for that. And that's pretty much what I do talk about on my podcast. There are also times when feeling your feelings is absolutely essential because they can get trapped in the body. They have to, feeling is energy in motion. If you don't allow them to motion, they get stuck, and they get stuck within our physicality. They get stuck within our spiritual body. They get stuck within the mental body. Ultimately, if we don't process them in a healthy way, they will get stuck in the physical body, and they'll show up as physical conditions. Some call it disease. In some cases, I suppose it is disease, but they will show up as a physical condition. So talking with my friend today, she encouraged that I share the story I'm about to share with you. I blanched at the idea, but then it was like, oh, what the hey. So I've improved. I've had a lot of improvement physically since the lockdown. I was having some issues with my knees before, and I'm not having those issues anymore. I'm not wearing heels anymore, as my friend Karen pointed out. We're not wearing heels, and so that's going to help your knees. But the knee represents, according to Louise Hay, who was one of the modern teachers about the mind-body-spirit connection, knees, the larger joints always represent forward movement, if you will. So in the case of knees, knee problems represent stubborn ego and pride, inability to bend, fear, inflexibility, won't give in. I've been working with all of that since the lockdown. I've been working through it in my job. I've been working through it in my home life. I've been working through it in myself, and how that has shown up for me is I've committed to be aware of how I feel. And when I'm on a conference call or a Zoom call or a Teams call, there are certain individuals within my experience who I have routinely have the same reaction to. And I started to honor how I felt, and that I was making myself feel like this, that I was giving myself this feeling of icky. And I was becoming aware of how critical I was in my mind, and that that wasn't doing me any good, and it wasn't changing the situation. And my criticism and my judgment, my judgy McJugderson side, was based on an old set of beliefs, ways of being in the world that don't work anymore. They don't work broadly, and they don't work for me. And so as I was working on ego and pride, inability to bend, inflexibility, won't give in, and I was integrating the new thought pattern, which is forgiveness, understanding, compassion, I bend and flow with ease and all is well. And as I've been working with that, my knees have gotten a lot healthier. I'm going up and down stairs without hesitation. I don't have to hold on to the hand railing. I'm not in pain. So that's pretty cool. But the story I'm going to share that, again, my friend encouraged me to share is, so our feet represent our understanding of ourselves, of life, and of others. My whole life, I have had awful feet. My mother used to comment about, you know, oh, Mary, you got to do something about those feet, dear. I didn't wear sandals. I didn't wear flip-flops. I preferred to wear, you know, closed-toed shoes, hose, you know, that sort of thing. I just, nothing I did seemed to take care of my feet. You know, I started getting pedicures when I was probably in my early 30s. You know, those would help for a day or two, but so as I've been doing my work over the last couple of months specifically about my understanding of myself, of life, and of others, I've noticed specifically in the last 10 days, the skin problems with my feet, the calluses, the whole completely have disappeared. Now, I have been taking good care of them. One of my splurges during this lockdown is this wonderful product. It's by Aveeno. You can get it, you know, in Target. It's called a foot mask. And so I, you know, buy 5 or 6 of those. And every 2 or 3 days after I've taken a bath or my shower, I will put this foot mask on my feet. And it just feels like the ultimate luxury, but it really makes my feet feel really good. And I've noticed that, again, my feet are beautiful now. I wear flip-flops. I wear open-toed shoes. It's just amazing. And so going back to look at this description of feet and foot problems, represents our understanding of others, of life, of ourselves. The new thought pattern is, my understanding is clear, and I'm willing to change with the times. I am willing to change with the times. I am safe. Those are feelings. Safe, that's a feeling. Understanding, clarity, that's a feeling. So the point that I'm making on my podcast, the reason why honoring how we feel is so key is because in order to live a life, to have life experiences, to experience the mundane and the miraculous, in order to just live day to day, part of the deal is that thoughts come and go. Thoughts come and go. And so when we honor how we feel, and we learn to start paying attention to how we feel, those feelings, that gets our attention, right? Most of the time, it's the painful, uncomfortable feelings that get our attention. They have a message for us. There's something that they're trying to say, something they're trying to tell us. Sometimes it can be something as simple as, I've got to stop being so judgy. I've got to stop being so critical of everybody. I've got to stop being so hard on myself. I've got to be more loving toward me. Something that's as simple as that. And sometimes it's something even deeper. And it deserves a deeper consideration, whether it's a deep conversation with somebody that you trust, finding a therapist who can help you work through some of these things. I've been reading a lot of books this summer about reincarnation and people who have been driven to therapy because they have exhibited physical conditions that traditional Western medicine can't find any explanation for. And so what do doctors do when they can't help you? They basically say, this is all in your mind, and you might be a little crazy and maybe you need to go talk to somebody. And so these books that I've been reading about psychologists who have had these experiences with their patients who have come and to talk about different phobias or, problems that they're having in their life. And the therapist is able to help them identify where this condition started. And very often it's in a past life memory. Right now I'm reading a book by Dr. Edith Fiore called You Have Been Here Before. Fascinating case studies of patients who have come in with just varying degrees of issues because of these buried emotions, not just the experience that they had, but the emotions that have been buried as well. And miraculously, when the emotions are revealed, when the circumstance comes to light and the emotions are freed, almost all the time, the condition completely heals up spontaneously. So there's something really important in that. Again, another reason why I want to call to your attention about feelings is this. So if you are under the influence of your source, you are in the natural flow of what is true, your well-being, your identity as a divine human being. If you are under the influence of your source, you're going to feel good. You're going to feel happy. You're going to feel any number of emotions, calm, peaceful, optimistic, hopeful, compassionate, loving, faithful, kind. That's great. That's how you can know I'm under the influence of my source right now. And, to me, feeling calm and peaceful is something very kind of even. And optimism, same thing. There's a little bit more height to that. Hopeful, faithful, all very heart-based emotions. When you're under the influence of your source, you're good to go and you're going to feel good. When you're not under the influence of your source, when our attention is on things that are, especially things that are not completely within our control, like others' behavior, frustrating circumstances, this year's pandemic, the ensuing uncertainty and insecurity, here in the United States, the U.S. Political and cultural upheaval. We got the November elections coming up. We can feel any number of uncomfortable emotions, anywhere from despair to frustration, anger, judgment, criticism, dissatisfaction, you fill in the blank. At that time, we're under the influence of what religious and spiritual traditions label the enemy. We're believing in that moment we are disconnected from our source, first of all. We're not disconnected because you can never be disconnected. But we have sort of pinched off. We've turned our attention away from our source, and we've got our attention on something that we clearly have a belief about, and so we feel really uncomfortable about it. That we're designed that way for that uncomfortableness to get our attention so that we could stop, take a few deep breaths, recenter ourselves, and choose deliberately what we do want to focus on. Acknowledging, I can't control the outcome of the November elections. I just can't. I'm going to do my part, but I don't have direct control over that. That's a much bigger, higher thing than me. So I'm going to turn my attention to something that I can control, and I can control what I think about, and I can control what I feel. Very few of us do this. We just kind of push through the day, and you know, at the end of the day, we get into bed and we're exhausted and we're pissed off, and you know, we're lamenting about due tomorrow, and it robs us of our joy. It robs life of our joy. What we also do is we sort of get into a conversation. We get into an argument, if you will, with these thoughts. We can take them on as self-doubt and self-criticism. We can take them on as I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy, I'm broken. I'll never be good enough no matter how hard I try. You know, we can take on that very self-defeating attitude. And so we can kind of try to have a conversation with ourselves, to talk ourselves up, or it doesn't usually end in a happy outcome, all right? So there is a story in Scripture that we're all familiar with, well, not all, but most of us are familiar with, and that is the crucifixion of Jesus. And there's something really poignant in this, in the crucifixion story, that was never pointed out to me growing up, but when someone drew my attention to it, to me being the focal point of one of the focal points of this experience. So we've heard the story of how Jesus is crucified and his cross is on the hill at Golgotha, and that there are two thieves who've been crucified with him. Excuse me. There's one on the left and there's one on the right. So if you go back to that, story, it talks about how the thief on the right, as the three of them are hanging there on the cross, on their crosses, the thief on the right says to Jesus, paraphrasing here a little bit, if you are who they say you are, then get yourself down from here. Scripture says, you know, you're surrounded by angels and they will lift you up so you don't even stub your toe on a stone. So if you're who they say you are, don't put yourself through this. Get down off of here. And hey, while you're at it, take us with you. The thief on the left rebukes the thief on the right and says, leave him alone. He doesn't belong up here. We belong up here. We did something wrong, but he didn't. And then that thief turns his attention to Jesus and says, remember me, Lord, when you get to heaven. And Jesus says to him, you'll be there with me. If you go back and you read that scripture, you will see Jesus never, ever gives his attention in any way, shape, or form to that thief that's crucified on his right. He doesn't recognize him. He doesn't acknowledge him. He doesn't give any indication he's even aware that this being has spoken. But he does give his attention to the thief on the left. The thief on the left represents the part of us, part of our human experience, the part of our consciousness that wants to be redeemed, that wants to believe that we are good enough, that wants to believe that we deserve the grace and the mercy that is given to us without our acting, that is available to us. All we have to do is recognize it. The thief on the left represents that part of us that wants to be redeemed. Okay? Those are the feelings of self-doubt, low self-esteem, worry, anxiety, depression, that feeling of uncertainty and insecurity. All of those emotions represent an opportunity for us to reconnect with our source and turn over the things that we don't have control of, turn it over, surrender it, if you will, to that higher power. Because there's this innate knowing that all we have to do is ask, and that assistance is readily, but we have to ask. So we want to be redeemed. The thief on the right has zero interest in being redeemed. In fact, the thief on the right hit that aspect of consciousness, its job from your connection to source. And religion has portrayed it as this, you know, this idea of Satan as being this this being that is roaming the world, as the prayer to Saint Michael, you know, says, roaming the world, seeking the ruin of souls. It's not seeking the ruin of soul. We are giving ourselves over to it. It's not seeking anything. It's opportunistic. And when in a moment of terror and worthlessness and connection from the truth of who we are, it's opportunistic. And that's the influence where you start receiving those thoughts about, this is never going to work out. There's no solution here. I don't know how I'm going to get out of this. This is terrible. This is awful. This is going to kill me. This, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Those are all that aspect of consciousness is opportunistic. And in a moment of weakness, that deeply uncomfortable feeling of terror, fear, deep worry, that is meant to get our attention. It's not a confirmation that what we're thinking is true. It's meant to get our attention so that we can stop and reorient and realign with the truth of who we are. So one of the key aspects of the crucifixion story, if you go back and you read this, and I'm not sure, all the four gospels talk about it, but they don't, I'm not sure which one exactly, it's Luke. It's Luke chapter 23, verses 39 to 43. That is meant to illustrate for us and for us to take the tack that Jesus took. He didn't try at all to reason with the thief on the right. He didn't try to change his mind. I was about to say that Jesus recognized the futility of it, but in fact, it's something even greater than that. What made Jesus Christ the healer is that his awareness pierced this world of illusion. What we see traditionally as reality was not what he experienced. He was experiencing what many people now are referring to as 5D consciousness, the world of perfection, which is where we all are. That's the truth of who we are. We are all perfect beings in the heart and mind of God. The judgment and the self-criticism and all of that, that's stuff that we do to ourselves. Now, I don't say that as a rebuke. I don't say that as to be pejorative. It's part of the human experience. This is what we do. This is what it, and we sign up for this. We know that this is going to be like this before we ever get here. But we get here and we forget, and we grow and we discern and we experience and we prefer. The whole point that I'm making, though, is that your feeling faculty is what will help you stay out of these conversations with yourself in your head, with those voices whose job it is just to get you distracted. That's all they're there to do. They can't hurt you. They can't hurt you, but they can cause you to hurt yourself. And so this is that wonderful saying that I heard a few years ago, don't believe everything you think. Don't believe everything you think. Learn in this coming week, start paying attention to how you feel. And then start correlating that with what you were thinking about just before you became aware of how you felt. What were you thinking about? What were you doing? What were you focused on? Because what you focus on expands, whether it's happy or sad, whether it's, you know, abundant or scarce. You have the power to choose something else. And now that you know that, start recognizing that your feeling will tell you whether you're creating in a direction that you want to go or you're creating in a direction you don't want to go. That feeling, what that feeling actually is when we are flowing our well-being, when we're in our natural state of well-being, we're very expanded, right? Our world feels expanded. When we're pinching ourselves off from that, that is contracted. And so that icky feeling is the gap, is tension between the truth, what it feels like, and the vibrational frequency of who we really are, as opposed to the contracted lower vibrational frequency that we're experiencing when we're in that realm of thought and emotion that isn't the truth of who we are. That's it. That's our show for this week. Thank you very much for your time and your attention. I hope you heard something that gave you some food for thought. I hope you will work this week with paying attention to how you feel, with honoring your feeling faculty. It is a lifesaver, people. It is a game changer. I encourage my listeners to reach out to me if you have questions, if something comes up as you're listening to this, or if I can provide more context. Reach out to me through my website, logospraxis.com. You can connect with me on social media through my website as well. You can click on the Schedule a Consult tab. Send me your question. I'll be happy to write back to you. Thanks again to Universal Energy Radio here on Blog Talk Radio for allowing me to host this weekly podcast. Go to iTunes and search for Universal Energy Radio. Like us there. And hopefully I will see you back here again next week. Have a terrific week, everybody. Good night.